Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks, who's been a bit under the weather, Tom, trying to soldier on, as they say. Look at the air quality outside, Tom. Is it any wonder that you've been suffering from all these allergies?
Well, you can see a lot of the dust and particulate matter in the air, but I think from what my doctor tells me, it's pollen, which you really can't see.
Right. Well, it's just a combination. I'm
sure the other stuff's not helping.
I'm not going to try to diagnose you here on the radio, but it, you know, there's a lot of stuff out in the air. So much so, Tom, that we have an air quality advisory that has actually been posted by Pima County. Hello, everybody. It is Friday, March 31st, 2017. Perhaps you're listening Saturday afternoon because we do re-air our Friday edition Saturday afternoon at 4 here on KVOI. And we, of course, have our streaming, live streaming, the podcasts anywhere in the world live listening at BuckmasterShow.com and KVOI.com. A couple of shout-outs to our media friends, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, TucsonLifestyle.com, Southern Arizona News Examiner, and Three Sonorans. All post links to the Buckmaster Show on their particular websites. Our Friday Focus interview today, Luigi Del Puerto, an award-winning journalist who is the editor at the Phoenix-based Arizona News Service, which under their portfolio is the Arizona Capital Times, the Yellow Sheet Report, and the Legislative Report. A native of the Philippines, Luigi worked in Manila at the nation's largest English daily newspaper. That would be the Philippine Inquirer. He joined the Arizona Capital Times shortly after moving to Arizona, and he has won numerous national and state awards for his reporting about politics and government. In January, he was promoted to editor, replacing Jim Small. Jim has gone from the Capital Times to become the executive director at the Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting. So Luigi is on our live line, but with me in studio, we have Linda Valdez, editorial writer and columnist for the Arizona Republic. How are you, Ms. Valdez?
I'm very well, Bill. Thank you.
And Sarah Garrett-Gaston is here. Sarah shares the same title but different newspaper, editorial writer and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Sarah, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's bring Luigi in. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. You know, we are hard to believe, but coming up on the 3-month mark in a week or so up in Phoenix at the legislature, what do we know about a spending plan, a budget, a blueprint for where we're moving forward or lack of progress when it comes to certain areas? What can you tell us about the budget?
Right. So at this point, typically we would have some sort of a draft between the House and the Senate, and they will be right in the thick of negotiations with the governor's office. It's a bit slower this year in terms of the process. Part of that is because we have a new Speaker of the House, J.D. Messner, and he wanted to get a budget that that he's calling a bottoms-up budget. So essentially what he has in mind is to go to the rank and file, get them more involved in crafting the budget, and then having the Appropriations Committee actually create that proposal, and then negotiating with the Senate and with the governor's office from there. And so at this point, the House has a draft proposal, you know, the broad strokes of what they want to do, but there are still a lot of moving pieces. What we know is the House, for example, doesn't want several major spending priorities that the governor has proposed. For example, the governor is proposing a 2% pay raise for teachers that's phased in over 5 years. The House said, well, let's give the teachers a bigger pay raise right away, 1% pay raise at a cost of about $34 million in the coming fiscal year. The House also does not want doesn't spend for the governor's university bonding proposal, in which the governor wants to permit the universities to bond up to $1 billion by using sales taxes that they pay That's roughly $30 million a year. So the budget, the House's budget, doesn't allocate any money for that. And so those are some of the sort of the sticking points, if you will, that there's they will be trying to flesh out here in the next couple weeks.
Let's bring Linda Valdez in. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Luigi. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about this bottom-up plan that Mr. Mesnard was trying to use. How did that actually work? And early on in the session, we heard talk about bringing the Democrats into the process, and then that didn't sit well with some of the majority members. Talk to us a little bit about how this actually played out.
Right. So thank you for the question. So in previous years, what we have seen happen is that it would be essentially the Senate or Senate and House leadership getting together, crafting a budget, going to the governor's office and saying, look, this is what we want. And at that point, they go back to their members and they say, well, this is what we have, and essentially you have to vote for this proposal. So the budget is dropped in members' lap, sometime in first week, second week of March, and then members really don't have a whole lot of choice except either vote it up or vote it down. There's not a whole lot of room for changes once it gets to the process. What Speaker Mesnard envisioned is as a process I had laid out earlier, where there are subcommittees. The subcommittees get to meet with, at the very least, the bigger agencies, and those agencies present their budget priorities. And from those priorities, these subcommittees will prepare or recommend spending priorities. And at that point, the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee would take all this input and then craft a budget proposal. It seems that they're in fact doing that. Insofar as sort of the input of the minority, every single year there are promises or there are indications that they would try and get the minority to have some more say in the budget. The reality is that that really doesn't happen. The budget is crafted by the majority, and Democratic input in that process is, quite frankly, minimal. On certain years, there's almost nothing from Democrats insofar as that budget process.
All right. Sarah?
Following up on that, what is the public input been like this session? Has there been any opening of the kind of process to let people, the residents, the citizens of Arizona, come in and participate in the budgeting process?
Yeah, and that remains to be seen. These budget proposals, we haven't seen. Let me backtrack a bit. So, in the past, what we have seen is the appropriations committees would have these budget proposals already crafted, more or less, and then they would hold these hearings. And these hearings typically would go on for a couple hours. And in those hearings, the input from the public is quite limited. If you're not a lobbyist, let's say you're regular Joe from Tucson or from Flagstaff, you drive to Phoenix. You get to speak for about 3 minutes or so on the budget, and they limit it that way because at that point in the process, the budget is more or less crafted. There is a broad agreement between the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, and that is always a point of contention. Democrats would always say, "We're not giving the public enough chance to speak their mind on budget proposals," and since we haven't had appropriations, the actual appropriations committee hearings yet on the budget, it remains to be seen whether we will see the public given the chance to actually weigh in on these budget proposals. And what I mean by that really is that give them more time to speak their minds to oppose or support spending items. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, it's the any input by the public is really limited. The budget is crafted by policymakers and really the Speaker, the Senate President, and the Governor's office. And if there is enough pressure from the public, for example, on teacher pay, and I can foresee there would be a whole lot of pressure coming from the public to make sure that teachers are going to get a better pay hike than what the governor is proposing. That is really where the public's input has a better play, if you will.
Well, it's not really transparent then if the public's having very little say in this. If it's being, this huge spending program is being crafted by basically three people, that doesn't seem right, Luigi.
Well, Democrats have always, and others as well, advocates for public education, for example, have always said, look, that's just not fair to the public that the budget is crafted this way. In so far as transparency, it depends on what you mean by transparency. Because if you mean you see the budget proposal, there is a hearing on it, and they approve that after a public hearing, after it's gone through the sort of the legislative process, that whole part is transparent. I mean, they are out there. You can have your say. You can go and speak in these committee hearings. But also, if you mean transparency by having more input from the public, actually having them getting more involved in crafting the budget proposal, I don't think that's ever happened in the 10, 11 years that I've been covering the state legislature.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. Luigi Del Porto will stick around for another segment, 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. But right now, our intermission music, the bump music, a little bit on the Doors. We'll talk more about that later in the show. But right now, what is this one, Tom? Break on Through, of course.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here. Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with the businesses they trust. At BBB, we also want to honor their efforts for doing business the right way. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that our annual Torch Awards are happening on Friday, April 7th at 5:30 p.m. at Casino del Sol. It will be a fun, elegant evening of celebration, and we hope you will join us. Register today at tucson.bbb.org. Thanks for doing business the right way, Southern Arizona.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Monday, it's the Monday Political Face-Off featuring commentators Vince Robigo and John Munger, plus our monthly visit with former United States Army Chief of Staff General John Wickham. Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI with worldwide live listening podcasts and show archive on my website. That's buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview, Luigi Del Puerto. He is the relatively new editor since early January at the Arizona Capital Times up in Phoenix. Sarah Garrett Gasson is here and Linda Valdez, Sarah from The Star, Linda from The Republic. And Luigi, I wonder if you could give us a really kind of bottom line overview. There's been so much confusion about what is going to emerge about this change in the initiative process in Arizona. Can you kind of articulate that for us, please?
Right. The governor recently signed a bill that bans per-signature payment. As you know, right now, those workers who gather signatures, gather them and they're paid by signature. That encourages them to get as many signatures as possible. This proposal that came from the Republican legislature said that, you know, that's not going to be allowed anymore. So that would mean essentially that the petition gatherers would be paid by the hour or maybe by the day. And critics of that say that makes it really hard for grassroots or true grassroots organizations to get something on the ballot. Let me backtrack a bit. It is already very hard to get something on the ballot. If it's an all-volunteer organization, the chances are they won't get a question on the ballot. It has to be a paid effort. You have to spend a whole lot of money to put a question on the ballot. So the governor signed that bill, and now there are talks of possibly referring that law to the ballot and having the people decide whether they support that or they would want to vote it down. In addition to that, there are several other sort of changes to the initiative process that Republicans are pushing. One of them, which is very problematic for campaigns or organizations that want to put something on the ballot, is a proposal that would require strict scrutiny for ballot initiatives. And what I mean by that is that every single petition that is submitted has to be correct, not just in substance, but in form. So, for example, if the date is somewhat wrong, there are gaps here that are quite minor, the judge, a critic could go to the court and say, look, those signatures have to be thrown out. Not because they're substantially problematic, but because there are like minor forms that are incorrect. And once you do that, it makes it even more difficult to get something on the ballot.
All right, here's Sarah Garrett Gasson of The Star.
I just wanted to comment about the petition signature paid circulators. I think you're absolutely right that it would make it almost impossible to get anything on the ballot. People just don't have that sort of time. But the flip side of that is, I mean, I know I ran into someone gathering petition signatures last November. It was last year, and I don't remember exactly what they were gathering signatures for, but the person who was trying to explain it and gather signatures was absolutely totally wrong about what the proposition was.
Oh, the way they were portraying it to you.
Yeah, and I had to say, no, I'm sorry, you're actually wrong.
Yeah.
So I think it's not a process that can be, that doesn't have its mm-hmm. faults to begin with. But along the lines of the feel of the legislature, I'm sort of interested in the environment. We have a very different House Speaker. We have different leadership. We have a lot of new people in the legislature. Luigi, could you talk a bit about just the atmosphere and how things compare this time around from even last year, the year before?
Yeah, in the House at least, I mean, it's a completely different atmosphere. As you know, when former Speaker David Gowan was in charge of the House, he had kicked out the press for a couple days before he was forced into opening the House floor again to reporters. That's one. J.D. Messner, the new House Speaker, is a former staffer of the Senate, and we have heard from both Republicans and Democrats alike that he's more open, that he has given, for example, he actually provided the Democratic caucus with more money so they can provide raises to their staffers, for example. And you know, it flows from the top, right? So if you have a guy who's more even-keeled, if you will, and quite frankly, a person who's not having to deal with the kinds of controversies and scandals that David Gowan had faced when he was the speaker, then, you know, you have a chamber that's just better run as a result.
Here's Linda Valdez.
I'd like to return to the budget for just a minute. The governor's budget proposed allowing universities to recapture local taxes and then use that as bonding to raise a lot of billion dollars towards capital expenses. That's one of the things that was left out of the House version, and I understand it's a bit controversial at the legislature. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the chances are for that and what your understanding is of how important it is to the governor that be in the final budget?
It is very important to the governor, and I can foresee that fight dragging on for as long as it's necessary for the governor to get something, anything, to give the universities more than what they're getting, and you're absolutely right. It's controversial. It has actually two pieces. One is it recaptures TPT revenues that universities pay, and sets that money aside for debt servicing in order to raise $1 billion in bonding capacity, which the universities then can use to construct, you know, new R&D buildings. The other part of that smaller amount, it's about $6 million. That TPT is coming from the local governments, which otherwise would be shared with the local governments. And that money is actually going to be set aside in the governor's proposal for operations. It's not for bonding. It's not for R&D or building renewal and maintenance. It's just for their operational use. And I'm starting to hear maybe some movement toward maybe giving that up so that the universities could still get the portion that they pay to the states, about $30 million each year. At least that's the estimate. But still, that's problematic to many legislators, Democrats and Republicans alike, but mostly Republicans, because they think that, you know, if they're going to give something to the universities, they want to give it out of the general fund, and that way, you know, it doesn't get or doesn't cut into their authority to appropriate money. Under the governor's proposal, of course, if this is approved, then that money, $30 million a year, sort of appropriated automatically to the universities. It sort of doesn't have to go through the pass through the sort of the legislative appropriations process.
So it's really about the power of the legislature to appropriate that money themselves.
That is correct. That is one of the arguments that we have heard Republicans repeatedly make. But also, many of the fiscally conservative members of the legislature are just averse to the whole idea of borrowing. You know, a couple years ago, we resorted to a couple of borrowing schemes to sort of help us get through the recession. But the whole idea of borrowing, even for capital expenditures, with some people and many other lawmakers would say, it is perfectly all right. I mean, fiscally conservative Republicans have a problem with borrowing per se.
Luigi, last year was I believe the budget was passed and the session was pretty much the fastest legislative session in many, many years. This one seems to be on a much slower pace. What are you hearing about how long this one might go? I mean, we do have 3 months, I guess, until they need to come up with a budget. And I can remember some years where they literally would stop the clock on June 30th. And
right.
Yeah, the budget would be approved at about 5 or 6 in the morning on July the 1st. But hopefully we're not on that particular path.
I don't think we'll get there. I think, although I think, what I'm hearing from the Senate and from the House is that, the session could, go as long as maybe end of May, right around Memorial Day, if you will, Memorial Weekend. But you know how it goes, right? They get a budget, agreement. Let's say they get a budget agreement next week. You know, at that point, everything, you know, you basically have a 1 or 2 week window to get everything done, because once you get a budget out, a lot of people would then go to the speaker, to the president, and to the governor's office and say, "Look, why are we still here? What are we still doing? The budget's done. That's our main reason for being here, for being at the Capitol. And once the budget's over and we have it in place, let's all go home."
Mm-hmm. Luigi Del Puerto, thank you, Luigi, for spending the first half hour of our Friday program with us and updating us on the legislature and the process in 2017. Thank you, Luigi.
Thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Luigi Del Puerto. He has been the editor of the Arizona Capital Times since early January. Sarah Garrett Gasson and Linda Valdez join me for our Friday roundtable. Also, Dan Scheer will check in from Green Valley. There's some breaking news concerning health care in Green Valley that's important news. We'll hear about that. But right now, a little bit more of The Doors. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant. Capturing the spirit of New Orleans cuisine, Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you at Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails. Open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We're counting down to the 50th anniversary of the Doors' first appearance here in Tucson on May 6, 1967. And why it's important to me, it was my first date with a woman who I've been married to for 45 years, coming up on May 5th. And as I have learned, and I posted on Facebook, Linda Valdez and Sarah Garrett Gasson with me in studio, that others, some of my Facebook friends, said they were also there. And Linda believes she might have been there, but actually, after talking to you, Linda, I think you were at the May 24th, 1968. Concert.
Well, yes,
because of
that
your
was the
about
case.
The police presence.
Right.
There were the two concerts, and both I think at High Corbett Field. But the one I was at, that first one, very little police presence there. But from what others are saying, it was a different story in '68.
Absolutely. The one I was at was the Morrison kept stirring up the crowd, and they rushed the stage, and mm-hmm. I was actually swept up onto the stage.
Oh my God.
And sat next to one of the speakers while he finished the concert, and he finished that concert with the police officer on either side of
yeah.
him. It was rather a scary experience.
And Congressman Ron Barber also weighed in on this on Facebook, and I think he was at the 68 concert as well, because he was talking about Morrison and the police on stage. So anyway, Sarah, I know you love the Doors too.
I do, and I saw them many years later out at AVA when it was Doors of the 21st Century mm-hmm. with Robbie Krieger and Ray Manzarek from the Doors and Ian Asbury from the Cult filling in for Jim Morrison. And it was not Jim Morrison, but it was a lovely evening.
Another thing I've learned, there is we believe it's a Super 8 film that's up at YouTube that is from the Tucson, rare footage of the Tucson 1967 concert. There is no audio with that, so whoever did it put some music to it, but it's kind of interesting.
We used to get some great concerts in Tucson in those days. We got better concerts than Phoenix
in
those days.
Anyway, Dan Shearer, the Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun, is on the live line. Dan, I understand you're not going to be talking about breaking news concerning the Doors, but you will be talking about Green Valley and the hospital. What the heck happened?
Well, we spoke with John Matuska. He is the CEO of the hospital. We were down there today talking to him, and he told us that they are going to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection later on today up in Tucson. We've got a story online at gvnews.com or saritasun.com. And this bill was really long anticipated. The hospital has been open for just under 2 years, and it has been in trouble almost since the beginning. Hmm. So John was hired in October, and we strongly suspected that he was brought in to drive toward just this very decision. And, of course, bankruptcy protection gets the creditors off your back, and they've got a couple hundred of them, and allows them to reorganize and try to get stable for the future. So that's where they're heading right now. So that will happen later on today, and he was very candid with us about what the debt is, and it's more than double what it should be for this size of a hospital, according to him. He said their total liabilities are about $88 million, and it should be around $37. So this should help them out in the future. We'll see what happens.
Quick questions from Sarah and Linda. Go ahead, Sarah.
Will the hospital remain open and taking new patients, do we know at this point?
As he said to us, absolutely nothing changes, and the only reason he told us is because this is all public. The filing is public, and he knew that we were checking the bankruptcy courts, and we have been for several months, frankly. Nothing changes whatsoever. The vendors are required by law to continue to serve you. Of course, it's on a cash basis, but basically everything before will be negotiated as far as what they're going to pay, but everything going forward is a cash basis, and they have the money to do that. They're actually bringing in Tucson Orthopedic, who is going to open their clinic here in another week or so, and hopefully they have got things in order for the future. But really, the problem was that they overbuilt the hospital, and they were undercapitalized.
Wow.
And everyone had known that. The rough number is that for every bed you have, and they have 49, you spend $1 million to build it. So that'd be $49 million, but our hospital cost around 70. So it's beautiful, but you pay for it.
Quick question from Linda. Go ahead, Linda.
Yeah, Dan, I guess you were kind of addressing what I was wondering about, but why was it so hard for them to make a go of it? Would they have done better if they just built a smaller hospital? Because it seems like there would be a need in the community.
Well, right now, in our high season, which we're in right now, they have got about 23 beds on average filled every night. In the low season, summer and early fall, it's about 17. So they are talking to a Tucson hospital. He wouldn't tell me which one, but they are trying to cut a couple of deals that will help fill those beds for various reasons. And we'll see what through various means, and we'll see what actually happens going forward. But they're not going to just try to get out from under the debt and then go like they always have in the past. They're looking at some pretty major changes for the future that will help drive traffic. Absolutely no talk whatsoever of closing it down. We knew that they had some people who were interested in buying it at one point, but he says that's off the table. They're going to go it alone as an independent hospital, maybe have this affiliation. It's not even a partnership with the Tucson Hospital, but it's an affiliation that will help them out a little bit. So we'll see how this turns out.
Dan, thank you very much. Dan Shearer, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill.
Dan Scheer with the news about the Green Valley Hospital filing for bankruptcy protection. Linda Valdez, Sarah Garrett Gasson with me on our Friday roundtable. I want to get back to what Luigi Del Puerto was talking about, Linda. It seems like one of the marquee issues coming out of the legislature is this whole kind of centerpiece about, in effect, having a very chilling effect on future initiative processes in the state.
That is definitely something the legislature is trying to do, and it's directly related to the passage of the minimum wage initiative in the fall.
It's kind of a payback, isn't it?
It is a bit of a payback, but I think it definitely is. The Chamber of Commerce really hated that initiative. They tried their best to knock it out in the courts. They failed to do that, so now they want to make sure that nothing like this happens again. But I think it's also very significant because the initiative process is a real check on the legislature. And right now we have a government that is completely controlled by one party. And if they successfully undermine the initiative process, they have assumed a little bit more power for themselves and eliminated one of the checks and balances that was written into the Constitution.
Yeah, I think it speaks to the refusal to accept other methods of people expressing themselves, the people of Arizona exerting their power to do things that the legislature would try to cut down that avenue people have for things that when you're in the face of lobbyists and other forces like that is hard to get the legislature to do. And so I think it's kind of like the parents trying to ground you or take away the car because they didn't like what you did, and it's just payback. It really is just pure and simple. Don't take away the method of the dissent rather than dealing with what the people actually want.
Well, and actually it follows a trend because last year the legislature allowed Ducey the gift of expanding the Supreme Court, which gave him
two more
justices, yes, which he named. And so that also increases their philosophical hold on state government. I mean, clearly judges don't always vote as they're expected to by those who appoint them. They have independence and they should, but it does increase the philosophical control. And I think that what they're doing with the initiative process needs to be seen in that context. I actually wrote a column about that that's going to run tomorrow in the Republic. Yeah. About the real danger of just seeing this as payback. I think it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more significant in the long term. It will be very significant to the state of Arizona if they successfully weaken the initiative process.
That will be tomorrow in the Arizona Republic, your column.
Correct.
Correct.
And I think Linda makes an excellent point that it is much more larger in scope than just the Supreme, the court or the judges or the initiative process. It's part of a bigger pattern that I think Linda is absolutely right to point out.
You know, Luigi Del Puerto also very nicely outlined the differences with the budget proposals in the House and the Senate about teachers. And one thing that jumped out at me is whichever version is accepted, it's not very much for teachers.
It's really not. When we're talking about a whopping 1% raise, that's not even cost of living.
Tom, do we have a call? All right, John is up to the plate. John, I've got about a minute and a half. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, it's not John, but doesn't really matter. I'm concerned about this process. It seems like that we the people send our representatives to Phoenix to do the job for us. This process that you're talking about is completely controlled by either domestic or foreign people with huge amounts of money or newspapers or TV networks that have the money to push through programs that they want, but the people don't know anything about, and they have not sent them to Phoenix to vote for them.
Okay, so you're saying special interests are behind all of the initiative process.
I special interests certainly can promote initiative processes, but there have been many that grew from the grassroots mm-hmm. and were very much citizen initiatives. They do have to raise money to get petition signatures. What the legislature has done actually will increase the cost and will make it more likely that anything that reaches the ballot will be the result of some deep pocket supporters.
And it is in the Arizona Constitution, the initiative process.
Yeah, it's there for a reason. It's there for a good reason. As far as the special interests, I think there's a big difference between groups like that support the minimum wage that are supported by a lot of Arizonans, I mean, it passed, versus a corporation or industry coming together as a special interest to promote a proposition or legislation. I think the will of the citizens and the voters, as they demonstrated, I don't know if we can consider that a, quote, special interest.
All right. We're going to leave it right there. Linda Valdez, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Sarah Garrett Gasson, thank you, Sarah. Do you have a column to Sunday's paper?
Yes, I do.
Topic?
And, letters to the editor.
Letters to the editor.
Yes.
All righty. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
All right, 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show. We have Matt Russell coming up next. Matt is going to be having a few tips for us, namely, top of the list, what's a good happy hour? We'll find out from Matt when we return. But now, people certainly are strange, aren't they?
When you're a stranger, faces look ugly. When you're alone, women seem wicked. When you're unwanted, streets are uneven. When you're down, when you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. featuring regional, national, and international news, local opinion, and views from top national columnists, business and technology news, auto reviews, books, and the box office, plus sports and a look back at the Old West. The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
All right, time for Weekend Watch, hosted by Mr. Matt Russell, Inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, award-winning Tucson publicist, and brought to us by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Mark your calendars now. They've got the Big Blues Festival, 22nd annual, coming up on the Memorial Day weekend. Almost said Labor Day. No, it's Memorial Day weekend, the end of May. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. They have the full listing of several dozen great recreation opportunities and a couple of dozen great places to stay. Only a 3-hour drive from Tucson to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now Mr. Matt Russell. How are you, sir?
Well, Bill, it's Friday. Does that answer your question?
Oh, boy, I am always ready. When I hear your voice on Weekend Watch, always makes me feel better because I know it is the weekend.
Indeed it is. And what better way to launch the weekend than a happy hour?
Yeah.
Now, as many of your listeners know, Bill, Pat Connors, who owned Pastiche with his wife for about 20 years. He passed away a few weeks ago, but Pastiche story lives on with its brand new owners who have pledged to continue offering everything we all love about the eatery, and of course that means a great happy hour. So in that spirit, let's launch our weekend at Pastiche today. How about jumbo shrimp stuffed with goat cheese and cream cheese wrapped with jalapeno bacon? Only $8 during happy hour. Discounts on drinks as well. This is a place where happiness hangs out, Bill. TGIF.
So happy for the new owners and the continuing on. Great restaurant location and opportunity to have some fun, certainly at the happy hour. We got some anniversary parties coming up here tonight.
Yeah, we do. You know, our friends at Hermano's Craft Beer and Wine Bar on 4th Avenue, they're going to be celebrating a big second anniversary tomorrow, and what a lineup they've planned. Starting at 5 p.m., they're going to be selling commemorative glassware, they're going to have live music by local bands, and the official launch of their new late-night menu. A couple of dishes that stopped me in my tracks are the house-cured bacon, cashew butter, and jalapeno jelly sandwich, you heard me, and the sesame ginger chicken wings that they make with a barbecue sauce from duck bone stock. Hermano's turns 2 tomorrow, and the party starts at 5.
Something tells me your middle name is Bacon.
Guilty as charged.
Any restaurant openings that you'd like to tell us about?
Yeah, Bill, a really cool concept in the culinary arts is opening its second Tucson location tomorrow on University Boulevard in Tyndall. It's called Cup It Up American Grill, and basically customers build everything themselves from an array of proteins and greens and grains, veggies and sauces and dressings, and you basically just stuff it all into a cup. It's that easy. Now, of course, cups come in different sizes, XL for me, please, and no two meals are the same. So I say have some fun cupping up tomorrow, Bill.
Yeah, it's a fun new concept, certainly. How about in the column in Inside Tucson Business?
Yeah, well, Bill, what happens when you suck all of the air out of foods in a way that completely shatters their cellular structure? It's called compression. And there's a chef in town that you might say has a compression obsession. I report on his story in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Thank you, Matt. Have a great weekend.
Back to you.
At 11 a.m. Sunday, right after Swap Shop, will be Liberty Watch with historian Dave Nichols. Mr. Nichols will be talking about the covert war between President Eisenhower and Senator Joseph McCarthy. That sounds interesting, which led to the senator's political demise. Then at 1 p.m. Sunday, world-renowned police captain and defense instructor Masoud Ayoub will be talking about the so-called warning shots. Are they a good idea for police and civilians? That's coming up on Sunday. The Buckmaster Show wants to thank a lot of people, including the gentleman from Munich, a young music composer named Christophan. Thank you, Christophan, for your original music for the Buckmaster Show. We very much appreciate it, and there is a link to your music at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. We are wholly responsible for the program's content on behalf of Tom Fairbanks, who does such a great job for me on Friday, engineering and producing the show. Ray Allen, sitting in the same seat as Tom, Monday through Thursday. Ray is our operations manager at KVOI. Of course, the owners of the station, Doug and Mary Martin. The whole team here, Jerry Cross in production, and my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, all of us wish you a very safe and sound, beautiful weekend. Have a good one.